Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello there and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, wishing you all a very happy and peaceful Christmas. Coming up in a few moments, Christmas readings, then peppered with a few carols to help along the spirit of Christmas. And a reflection for all the people who are missing something at Christmas and don't realize the Saviour is born at Christmas for them above all. And our popular Latin lover picks a Christmas carol for us. I'd like to begin today by offering you some Christmas cheer in this selection of writings from some of our Catholic writers. Stay tuned to this program presented by Jill Bevilacqua.
Our first reading is of a poem by the 16th century Jesuit martyr Robert Southwell. It's entitled New Prince, New Pomp.
Behold a silly, tender babe in freezing winter night. In homely manger trembling lies, alas, a piteous sight. The inns are full, no man will yield this little pilgrim bed, but forced he is with silly beasts in crib to shroud his head. Despise him not for lying there, first what he is inquire. An orient pearl is often found in depth of dirty mire. Weigh not his crib, his wooden dish, nor beasts that by him feed. Weigh not his mother's poor attire, nor Joseph's simple weed. This stable is a prince's court, the crib his chair of state. The beasts are parcel of his pomp, the wooden dish his plate. The persons in that poor attire his royal liveries wear. The prince himself is coming from heaven, this pomp is prized there. With joy approach, O Christian wight, do homage to thy king, and highly praise his humble pomp, which he from heaven doth bring.
And let's follow New Prince, New Pomp with a lullaby carol entitled Infant King. Our second selection comes from Carlo Carretto's Letters from the Desert. Carretto, who was a little brother of Charles de Foucault, writes here of the chief protagonists of the Nativity, Mary and Joseph, celebrating their immense faith.
Of all the men and women who lived by faith, two reached towering heights. They lived at the watershed between the Old and New Testaments, and were called by God to such a unique and magnificent vocation that heaven was made to wait in suspense for their reply. Mary and Joseph. Mary became the mother of the Word. She gave flesh and blood to the Son of God. And Joseph must veil the mystery, placing himself at her side so that everyone might believe that Jesus was his son. For these two creatures, the night of faith was not only dark, but also painful. One day, Joseph, engaged to Mary, realizes that she is to give birth to a child which he knows is not his. Think of the task of convincing one's betrothed that the mystery of that birth is due to nothing less than the power of God. No reasoning could give Joseph peace and serenity, only faith. And it is precisely this faith which sustained him, placing him next to the Mother of God to accompany her in her destiny and take a full part in her mission. It won't be easy to follow the example of such a man destined to suffer, the spouse of a woman who is to be called the Mother of Sorrows.
The baby is born. A few angels came, it is true, to chase away a little of that darkness, but at once the sky closed on yet a greater darkness. The children of an entire village are slain on account of their baby, and Joseph and Mary, fleeing, hear the cry and lament of the women of Bethlehem. Why? Why is the all-powerful silent? Why doesn't he kill Herod? But this is the point. It is necessary to live by faith. Flee into Egypt, become exiles and refugees, let cruelty and injustice triumph. And so it will be until the end of time. God didn't soften the path of those whom he put beside his son. He asked of them a faith so pure and uncompromising that only two souls could live up to this demand. What an adventure! To live for 30 years in a house where God lived in the flesh of an earthly man. To eat with him, listen to him speak, see him sleep, see the sweat on his brow, and on his hands the calluses of weariness and work. And all this quite simply, as something normal and everyday, so normal that absolutely nobody will unveil the mystery or realize that the carpenter's son is the Son of God, the Word made flesh, the new Adam, heaven and earth.
Oh God, what great faith! Mary and Joseph, you it is who are masters of faith, perfect examples to inspire us, correct our course, and support our weakness. Just as you were beside Jesus, you are still beside us to accompany us to eternal life, to teach us to be small and poor in our work, humble and hidden in life, courageous in trial, faithful in prayer, ardent in love. And when the hour of our death comes and dawn rises over our friendly night, our eyes, as they scan the sky, may pick out the same star that was in your sky when Jesus came upon earth.
One of the most familiar of all carols is the anonymous 15th century classic, I Sing of a Maiden. The original tune, if there ever was one, has been lost. First, let's hear the poem, and then a 20th century musical arrangement.
I sing of a maiden that is matchless. King of all kings, for her son she chose. He came all so still where his mother was, as dew in April that falleth on the grass. He came all so still to his mother's bower, as dew in April that falleth on the flower. He came all so still where his mother lay, as dew in April that falleth on the spray. Mother and maiden was never none but she. Well may such a lady God's mother be.
Thank you.
And now to conclude, here is the Nativity Song by Francis Chesterton to celebrate the babe whose feast it is.
How far is it to Bethlehem?
Not very far.
Shall we find the stable room lit by a star?
Can we see the little child? Is he within?
If we lift the wooden latch, may we go in?
May we stroke the creatures there, ox, ass, or sheep?
May we peep like them and see Jesus asleep?
If we touch his tiny hand, will he awake?
Will he know we've come so far just for his sake?
Great kings have precious gifts and we have naught. Little smiles and little tears are all we brought.
For all weary children, Mary must weep. Here on his bed of straw, sleep, children, sleep.
God in his mother's arms, babes in the bar, sleep as they sleep who find their heart's desire.
Well, thanks there to Jill Bevilacqua and to the many readers on the programme. Meanwhile, it's time to join Monsignor Peter Fleetwood, who hasn't forgotten us this Christmas, preparing for us some special seasonal thoughts by the title of And When Did You Last See Your Father?
Some things are easier to see from a distance, especially what we experience as children. That is very clear to me when I realise where I got my interest in geography. When I was a boy, Catholics were not allowed to eat for several hours before receiving communion. So after Sunday Mass, we would go home, have a really good breakfast. Then, if the weather was good, my father would take my little brother and me for a walk to the port. It was fascinating to see the names of the cities where the big cargo vessels were registered. Montevideo, Accra, Gdansk, and all sorts of places. I've no idea whether my father was pleased when I dug out the encyclopedia back at home and asked him to find these places on the map, but he did, and it would be hard to find anyone more interested in maps than I am now. If the weather was not good, we would hop on a bus, visit one of the city's museums or art galleries. One picture that struck me then, still does, shows a young boy dressed in blue, standing on a box so he can see over a desk, on the other side of which a soldier is sitting, smiling at him. The boy's sister is behind him, crying, and his mother looks nervous. The title of the painting tells us what the man behind the desk is asking the boy. And when did you last see your father? The scene is set in the English Civil War. The boy's sister and mother both know that if he is honest, he will betray his father. Father probably brought him up to tell the truth. May explain why his sister and his mother look so uncomfortable. Much of that was beyond me as a little boy, but it is clearer now. The boy in that picture was lucky. He had a father. Father was still alive, although the boy could well put his father's life in danger. One of my cousins once asked me a tricky question about her mother. I had buried both her parents. The other cousins told me their youngest sister had a question she was too embarrassed to ask. But she eventually managed to put it into words. Peter, where is my mum now? Very upset. Really wanted to know the answer. It was one of the most difficult situations I've ever been in. But it gave me the chance to explain what the Catholic Church teaches. Kathy was relieved she was not mad, simply because she wanted to talk to her dead, much-loved mother. Every year at Christmas, jolly songs urge us to be merry and enjoy ourselves. But there are hundreds of people in every church, every street, every family, really miss someone and would love to be able to speak to them when they are celebrating, trying to celebrate, what has become a family feast. It must be hard for them to listen to all these songs when what they want is something completely different. What struck me as a young priest was how hard Christmas is for widows or widowers. So from my second Christmas, I made it my business to visit some of them on Christmas Day, before I went home to see my own family. Usually, they had no idea why I was there, but they always looked pleased. I would stay just a few minutes and try in my own poor way to offer some sign of friendship and care. It was not the time for much talking or for questions. Years later, I was sent for Christmas to a really difficult parish where more than 40% of the people who could have worked had no job. Crime rate was very high. People I learned to look out for that time were those with a relative or a friend in prison. I had visions of the little boy in the picture when I saw some of the children in church. When did you last see your father? Your husband? Your boyfriend? Son? Daughter? Your sister? I could be a slow learner, or perhaps God just allowed me to discover very slowly but naturally just how difficult Christmas can be for so many people. In that same parish, I led a meditation one day when we prayed not only for people in prison or people whose friends and relatives were there, but also for what we used to call unmarried mothers. And I suggested they had a friend in Jesus' mother, Mary, knew from her own experience exactly what it was like to have the finger of judgment pointed at her by narrow-minded members of the community. Within a day or two, I was reported to the Archbishop for daring to compare the Blessed Virgin Mary with an unmarried mother. The person who reported me proudly came to tell me she had done so. Perhaps I'm a really slow learner, because all I could say in reply was, "But she was an unmarried mother." That just made things worse. But I've persisted in my wickedness, and I still pray and ask others to pray on Christmas Day, people who are bringing up children without a husband or a wife to help them. The Archbishop never said anything, by the way. I was in an airport lounge recently, and the television in the corner was on. It was Sunday evening, first Sunday of Advent. Even though we should not really sing it until the 17th of December, I heard the chorus of a famous Advent hymn. "Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel has come to thee, O Israel." A man got up and walked away. It was only when he passed me that I saw the skull cap. What is it like for an Orthodox Jew to hear that hymn? It must sound very odd. But my thoughts moved on swiftly to Jerusalem and Bethlehem, where I go every year in January as part of my work. It is a privilege to go to the Holy Land. Being in particular places fills me with all sorts of emotions. But it is hard and disheartening to see the depth of fear and hatred in the faces of both Palestinians and Israelis. Everyone has an opinion on the situation there. There are experts in every group listening to or watching news reports around the world. But the sad fact is that there is no easy answer, no painless remedy. The little town of Bethlehem is hemmed in by an ugly wall these days, and it is rare for a Christian from there to get permission to visit Jerusalem, which is only 15 minutes away in a car or minibus. The deep, dreamless sleep of the people there in the time of Jesus has changed. Severe mental stress and nightmares. And there is no longer such a thing as a silent night. Christmas hymns and carols sound very different to the people who live there and anyone who has visited the Holy Land in recent times. By the way, I would never justify the firing of missiles against Israelis or any of the wicked violence that goes on within the Palestinian community. I simply stretch out my hands in prayer to God and ask the people with me in church to pray those ancient words prayed by Jews and Christians alike. Peace of Jerusalem, pray. Peace, your home. Christmas message is much simpler than the myth that has grown up in nearly every culture, certainly in the Western world. There's something important to all the people I've been talking about, people who have come to matter so much to me at Christmas. But it is a message that is hard to believe. Word was made flesh, dwelt among us. The way I translate that, the language of the city where I grew up is, God has become like us, has come to live in our street. That sounds banal and beneath God's dignity. Think again. That is what it is all about. We could never have deserved it. God simply loves us, all of us. Why? The only answer the gospel gives us is that God didn't want the world to wreck itself, perish, but to have everlasting life. Whatever kind of mess our lives are in, whatever state the world is in, God didn't just leave us to it, came one of us. This makes a difference to rich and poor, good and bad, everyone. Evidently, God sees beyond what looks like disaster to us. So our prayer is never simply for the peace of Jerusalem and for peace our homes. It's also for peace in the homes, especially in the heart, of widows and widowers, of prisoners and their families, single parents, of the Christians in the Holy Land, of our friends plagued with cancer, of women about to give birth, of people whose relationships have fallen apart, of all the lonely and abandoned people in our parishes and neighbourhoods, all the people who are missing something, perhaps don't yet realise the Saviour is born at Christmas for them above all.
Heartfelt thanks there, as always, to Monsignor Peter Fleetwood, a familiar voice to our listeners. And finally, on a totally different note, we join our popular Latin lover, Carmelite Father Reginald Foster.
What would you pick as Christmas, as a Christmas carol or Christmas music?
It would be, our Gregorian chant, which we sang in class.
Hmm. Like what, for example? I have a list here.
You have all these, some of them are out of this world.
Is there one you particularly like there that we can play for our listeners?
Christi Redemptor Omnium. That's the thing there.
Yeah.
That's one of the best. It's really extraordinarily beautiful.
Is there a Christmas carol that you think the Latins would have enjoyed?
Oh, my. Joy to the World.
Why do you think they would have enjoyed Joy to the World?
It's just the way it flows. The music and the ideas, too.
Can you explain? And how do you say joy to the world in
Latin? Well, Gaudium toti orbi, or toti gaudium orbi, joy to the whole world. Joy to the world, the Lord has come, Advenit Dominus.
Do you have a special message to our listeners,
Latin? No. Oh, a special message.
Special Christmas greeting for our listeners.
Ut eorum Christus repleat animos et domos, ut prosperet opera et consilia, et ut novum concedat eis prosperimumque annum.
Which means?
Okay, that the Lord may fill their hearts and
homes.
Can
you just break it down slowly?
Dominus replea. I think I said animos et domos. May he fill their hearts and homes. prosperet, may he prosper their concilia et opera, their plans and works, et tribuat eis, concedat, any word you want, novum annum prosperimumque, a new and most prosperous year. It's always been more beautiful in Latin.
We send these Christmas greetings through the airwaves, I would say. How does one say through the airwaves?
Per undas aéreas. Or undas per aéreas.
You've been listening to Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, the Pope's own Latinist. And that's all I have time for on today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scarsbrick, wishing you all a very happy and peaceful Christmas once again. Should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.